This is Mae Russell, and it is the second half of tape number 852, April the 4th, 1988. I was going to do a lot about the occult. I have so many articles and material and references from books to continue on the occult, which I agree with Sandy Gallant is the number one crime story of the century. It's even bigger than the assassination of John Kennedy, Robert Kennedy, and Martin Luther King. It's the next step beyond to the intents and purposes and the network of people doing these things. I have a conflict because each week I want to do more on that material, and then, of course, next week I want to get into George Bush and maybe do a section on George Bush every single week until the elections take place in November of 1988. A friend of mine sent me a section of her husband's library. He passed away, and he studied political science, and she sent me material from his library. And among the things she sent me was a magazine called The World's Work. And it was published by Doubleday, Page and Company. And I don't know how long it was out. The issue that she sent me was July 1918. It's a magazine the size of the National Geographic. It's slick and shiny and was printed in New York City, L.A., and Chicago. By Arthur W. Page, the editor. The World's Work, published in 1918. And in there, there's a section of small articles. The main lead story is the talk of the office. And under it, it says, German plans for world conquest. And this is what these two paragraphs say in this article that came out in the year 1918. A few months ago, The World's Work printed an article by J.B.W. Gardner, pointing out the portentous meaning of events that give clear evidence that Germany is preparing for her next great war. This article created such widespread interest and brought such an avalanche of letters that Mr. Gardner was persuaded to develop the theme of the article further. Therefore, he has written a book, which I'm going to try to get somewhere, on the subject entitled German Plans for the Next War. We rushed into print a few weeks ago copies of this article, the resume of the book, without the usual preliminary announcement and advance sales. In this book, Mr. Gardner presents indisputable proof that Germany, convinced that she cannot attain her aims completely now, is planning a war of world conquest for the next generation. That was really before there was an Adolf Hitler. There was a Hitler who was gassed with mustard gas and went to a hospital and then became part of a mind control program identical to the one that Ronald Reagan had when Patrick Frawley and the powers that be in California decided that he would be the president of the United States. And this intent to rule the world was evident in 1918. And then I have to put this book, obtain it, and put it next to my book, The Nazis Go Underground by Kurt Reese, and show the plans in 1943 to take over the world the next time by the Germans. And this way, this time they don't even have to have a war. They can undermine us every which way from inside out. And the United States right now is turning around and is behaving the way it would behave if it were victimized and were not the winner of World War II. And I believe strongly that the purpose of all of this occultism brought in by Aleister Crowley from British intelligence, brought in the 40s, just when the war was winding down, was to turn people to Satan and turn them against each other and create the general chaos, the strategy of tension that Stefano Della Calle and the CIA used, that the occult part, the rituals, the killings, the drinking of blood, the vandalism, the cannibalism, eating human beings, is preparing for Germany's control of us within a few more years. The San Francisco Chronicle had two articles about Nancy Reagan and her new house. One was March 29th, and it explains how she bought a house in Bel Air. And, of course, I had that on the program World Watchers about 8 months ago. And Ronald Reagan bought this home because members of an 18-member investment group formed together to buy a home for the President of the United States. Two names are familiar, the early Reagan life, Holmes Tuttle and Earl Jorgensen. But there are 18 people that decide, we will buy the president a home. Now, he's supposed to return gifts over a certain amount. He made money in the movies. His wife had money. Her family were fairly well off. He worked for General Electric. He was a governor 8 years and a president. And I don't know why they can't live on the money that they made and their Social Security that comes and et cetera, et cetera. But I don't know how these people are allowed to have a home handed to them. Over $2 million, they allegedly will rent it for 3 or 4 years and then have the option to buy it, but it'll be supplied for them. And how come there's not more outrage about the fact that these 18 people should be identified? We hear about Meese getting favors and Ursula Meese getting favors and jobs, and Nancy doesn't have to work because a $2.5 million home is bought for her. And I mentioned, again, about 8 months ago that the address was 666 St. Cloud Road. That's in Bel Air, right near University of California. Well, the Chronicle had a story this week that the First Lady visited the house 666 and the building that is called the Demon House. But because of the biblical mention of the number 666 as the sign of the devil, the Reagans made sure that the address was changed. So they now live at 668 St. Cloud Road. Of course, they have enough influence to change the number on their house, so they're not going to be in the devil house. Now, I wanted to run through a few obituaries with you. There's so many that come out every week, and I've been putting one or two on the air every week, and some of these you might have seen or might not have seen, but I think they're important to what is going on at the present time. One is the long article, Inquiry Urged into 8 Deaths of British Scientists Who Die in Mysterious Ways. Last April, April the 10th, 1987, the San Francisco Examiner had an article, Mysterious Suicides of Scientists Puzzle British Society, although they hardly look like suicides at all. And 5 of them worked for Marconi Underwater Systems defense contractors. But 8 scientists have died in Great Britain. It sounds very much like alternative 3. And now they're asking for the investigation because they want to know what is the link between these deaths. The government has pushed aside any investigation. They said there's no evidence to support the idea that these deaths were linked other than coincidence. And yet all of these people are working with the guided missile system, with the Star Wars plans. And for one reason or another, 8 scientists have been killed. I haven't had time to bring to your attention an article I've mentioned a few times about 6 or 8 of the top leading Japanese businessmen dying all at one time last year. And here are 8 scientists in Great Britain. It reminds me of the missing agents and scientists in Alternative 3. And if you think about it, that book was written as nonfiction about the United States and Soviet Union working together on a project on Mars, which we're doing, about how the Earth is too crowded, there's too many people because of the ozone layer pollution, which is happening, and the missing scientists that are used for experimentations. And, of course, in Great Britain, there are 8 scientists missing, and also in Germany, one of the Star Wars scientists was gunned down recently, and also in Italy, the same thing. Another death this past week, the article's titled, Ex-Secretary to Chief of Police Gates in Los Angeles Beaten to Death. Alida Marie Brown, who worked with Chief of Police Daryl Gates for quite a long time, was found with a broken neck and was choked. And she was in Gates' office from April 1981 until November 8th, 1987. And I think of what 2 events would come through Daryl Gates' office that this woman would know about. One, of course, is the murder of John Belushi. There was even some talk or allegations that Daryl Gates' brother had supplied some of the narcotics for Kathy Smith, who then killed John Belushi, and Daryl Gates' own son was arrested on narcotic charges. And also the big story is the story of the organization called Western Goals, with its headquarters in Los Angeles, and a $100,000 computer that was shared with Los Angeles Police Department, J. Paul and Daryl Gates. And that event has been very much hushed up, considering the meaning of this organization having a direct link to the police department. And then when Larry McDonald died on the Korean airline, he was chairman of Western Goals. The chairmanship went to Carl Spitz Channel, who was the first person to plead guilty to the Iran-Contra affair. And so this personal secretary of Gates would certainly have knowledge of Western Goals and the John Belushi case. There was an article about a policeman in a Miami Herald. He's called a former policeman because he murdered 9 people, he was perfectly normal until he murdered 9. He said he wanted to get rid of the world of evil, and he murdered them, and they were involved in drug trade, and he had to clean up the world and get rid of these people. The important thing about this policeman who killed 9 people, he was a former highway patrolman, a Boy Scout leader. He was decorated in the Navy. He had to file a full record of commendations. He once had a file, rather, on commendations from the military. And he's been accused of this killing rampage. Among other things, in his apartment was a camera and pictures of the victims, but also a collection of Nazi memorabilia. He was a Nazi American, and he even had a Doberman pincher with a swastika on his leg. This kind of person who wants to rid the world of these ugly people, he has to get rid of them, is typical of the Nazi mentality, where selected people were offed very early in the period just before Adolf Hitler was officially elected in Germany. So this former policeman, Eagle Scout, was getting rid of people, 9 people. Another untimely death for a member of Congress, the story, prominent lawmaker in the House of Representatives, dies at age 60. This is Representative John Howard of New Jersey, the influential chairman of the House Public Work and Transportation Committee. He was a member of the House for 22 years, and he died of a heart attack out on the golf course and just passed away. There's a quotation in the Kansas City Times again. Democratic Senator Edward Kennedy said, "Jim's always said he was inspired by President Kennedy to enter public service, and he was one of the most efficient and effective loyal supporters that John and Robert Kennedy and I ever had. He was instrumental in passing a Clean Air and Clean Water Act, and he fought to end pollution on the coast of New Jersey." Now, New Jersey has been involved with a lot of mafia contracts to get rid of pollution that they were dumping into the water. So if he was ending pollution in New Jersey, he was rubbing shoulders with a lot of mafia who intended to pollute. Last week, I talked about Native American Julian Pierce in North Carolina, who was running for a political office as a candidate for the Supreme Court judge in North Carolina. He formerly worked with the Security Exchange Commission. He got death threats from the Ku Klux Klan before he was killed. They told him they were going to kill him. But, of course, the law enforcement agent investigating his murder, Sheriff Hubert Stone, an antagonist against the American Indian Movement, solved the crime within a few days. I just had on the air, and the next day the crime was solved. Another American Indian was charged with the crime. That Indian commits suicide, sort of like killing Lee Harvey Oswald and not knowing if he killed John Kennedy or not, which later turned out he didn't do. So this very important American Indian attorney who has been trying to fight all kinds of racism and oppression in his hometowns was threatened to be killed by the Klan and was killed. That's the third article in 3 weeks that I have cited where a person was threatened to be killed and was killed. A lot of people told me when I got the death threat that the people who threaten don't mean it, but I could cite one article a week or 10 if you have the time. And, in fact, people who threaten to kill do often kill. And so here is the Klan killing this Indian leader. And remember the SLA murder, some of you don't, of Dr. Marcus Foster, the black man in California who was killed. And he was warned by the Nazi party out in San Leandro, California, he would be killed. And, yes, indeed, he was killed. So people make threats and people do it. And that's why I took the threat seriously. Now, a landmark case came down this past week in terms of legal opinions that can affect a lot of what happens in the future in terms of murders and death penalties that is really scary. The San Francisco State Supreme Court that meets in San Francisco unanimously overturned the death sentence of a man, Mr. Lucero, who killed a little boy, 7 years old. Chris was 7 and Teddy was 10. He put their bodies in a trash bin, and he was supposed to get the death penalty. And in California, they got rid of the Supreme Court Chief Rose Byrd because they thought she was too soft on the death penalty. And, of course, when a decision comes along, it's reversed for other people for the same reason she was accused of being soft. Now, the important part about this case is that the person who did the murders was a Vietnam veteran. And his argument was that he had a psychological disorder caused by post-traumatic stress, and that he shouldn't be given the gas chamber because the military had taught him to kill, the Vietnam stress had caused the murder, and that he may be experiencing traumatic incidents and flashbacks. Now, the defense argued no death penalty because he was a Vietnam veteran. A lot of the paramilitary that have committed terrible crimes, and a lot of the activity with satanic rituals, and such as David Berkowitz, who was over in Vietnam when he got into the satanic group, he can come home and say, I was trained in the military, and therefore I'm not guilty. David Berkowitz didn't get the death penalty, but this sets the precedent for Vietnam veterans who are very, very violent to do murders and get off, or somewhat get off, not completely, because they've been to Vietnam and been taught to kill, and this argument says society taught them to kill. So we may see many of these gung-ho Vietnam veterans getting off of hard sentences or sentences on this very historic landmark case of society teaching him to kill. There is another person in Paris who died a very untimely, quick death, who was linked to the Iran arms connection, and his name was Ralph M. Broman, B-R-O-M-A-N, a Colonel Ralph Broman, nicknamed Bud. He's a black officer who was stationed in the American Embassy in Paris, and it was Mr. Broman who was given the order from whoever higher up that was at the meetings to tell the Pentagon at home to start sending the TOW missiles to Iran. And his contact in the Pentagon was General Colin Powell, who was promoted to be head of the national security. And this Mr. Broman ordered the missiles on instructions from Americans in Paris to the Pentagon. And after the instructions went out, he formally left the service. He became a former member of the Army, and he formed a shipping line, Ralph Broman, and he was shipping weapons to Iran through the shipping line and transferred from the embassy in Paris to an ordinary citizen in a business shipping arms to Iran. He was married to the daughter of the head of French intelligence, and I mentioned the role of Mr. De Marinche, the French intelligence chief, who was advising Ronald Reagan about such things as World War III and how to produce enough activity to create a excuse for World War III to begin, and also the death of Glenn Souham in Paris, a gentleman who was instrumental in getting a shipment of arms, at least one, from Poland through France, and then down, it was supposed to go to the Contras and was held back by Noriega in Panama to check out where the weapons were going or to torture the Americans. And Glenn Souham was gunned down in Paris, and his father was in the State Department in the White House the very day that he was being killed in Paris, and he worked for the National Security Council. So Mr. Broman, Colonel Bud Broman, is another person linked to the arms to Iran and the Irangate scandal, who was instrumental in giving the go-ahead to ship those arms for after meetings in Paris. Many of you might have seen a story, Washington Post had a long item, some of the papers didn't carry it, titled Environmental Protection Agency Stops the Use of Nazi Human Tests, Washington Post, and this was March 24th. The article says that the Environmental Protection Agency was going to be using tests approved by John Vandenberg of the EPA for a gas called Phosgene, P-H-O-S-G-E-N-E. This gas was used as part of Nazi experiments at prisoner war camps in Strasbourg and in France. And the people at the EPA, Mr. Vandenberg, and a company called Clement Associates in Washington, thought it was very good to use the Nazi gases that were experimented on Jews and prisoners for finding out what poison gases do or how to build up a resistance to them. That's the excuse for doing that. But then some other people caught on to what was happening. A Judith Bellin, an EPA toxicologist, attended a forum, and she noticed that the charts were made out of the effects of prisoners of war, that they came through scientific discussions of the Nazis. She said it is unethical, that these weren't really scientifically done. A good scientist wouldn't use this Nazi work. It was described as a piece of crap. And the researchers and scientists got together and decided they wouldn't use the Nazi experiments for American scientific papers. Dr. Robert J. Lifton, a psychiatrist and expert on Nazi medical experiments, said that once in a while the data is occasionally discussed today, but he knows of no cases where this was the basis for scientific evaluation. Now, after I read that, I was thinking about the poison gas that Iraq used to put on the Kurds and to test them. That's right in their own area. To at least 5,000 people died. And there was a series of articles this past week, one titled Gas Victims Flown to Europe, March 30th, 1988, San Jose Mercury. Two dozen Kurds burned on hands and face and backs were attacked with poison gas. They were flown to Vienna, Austria, to West Germany, to Great Britain, and Switzerland, where the testing of, or curing, in quotes, curing, these young people being sent to Europe away from Iraq and Iran, they could work on them and see the effect of cyanide and mustard gas bombs used to kill so many. And a Dr. Freelinder, department head of Vienna's University for Plastic Surgery, will be working with these people injured in mustard gas and the combination of light nerve gas causing headaches and dizziness and burning the lungs and so forth. So the countries that used poison gases to experiment on human beings are now treating the victims of poison gas, and the poison gas was supplied by France and Western countries for these horrible burnings that took place. And maybe they're allowed so that they can use these people who are victims to experiment on the environment or the testing. They don't have to give gas to people to test it afterwards. That would look as bad as Nazi Germany, but you could drop the bombs and then fly the victims to Vienna and Germany, Switzerland and England to work up the studies afterwards. There was a long article in the Washington Post, March 17, 1985, about a book that was written called Flowering of the Bamboo. I might have mentioned it 3 years ago on World Watchers a long time ago, and this has to do with a well-known person, a Japanese prisoner, who was put into the prison and charged with a crime that he didn't do, and he was held for 30 years, and he was convicted for mass murders in 1948, and he said he didn't do that. He said that the Americans were fearful of the exposure of a secret experiment unit the Japanese were doing, with the, and the United States used that information, and that he could be privy to it, and that they put him in jail to cover up for the experimentations that were taking place. He said after the war, the United States granted members of the Japanese unit immunity from war crime prosecution in return for data from their experiments. This did not become generally known in Japan until 1970s, when the newspapers wrote extensively on the subject. Mr. Hirasawa's supporters have contended that the Americans didn't want those operations exposed, so they charged him with some of the medical failures or deaths and put this man in jail. He, in 1948, went to prison. He was convicted of a bank incident, which time people would be exposed. In the afternoon, a man posing as a health inspector entered a Tokyo branch of the bank and tricked 16 employees into drinking a poison and told them it was a medicine to prevent an epidemic, and the man fled with some money. People were left on the floor breathing, and 12 of them died, and he said that this was part of an experiment and that he was convicted, and it's written up in a book called Flowering of the Bamboo, published by Woodbine House, a Washington publisher, on the United States and the Japanese working together, the Japanese Army Chemical Laboratory, where experiments took place. The shocking thing about those experiments was also written in another book, and the person who wanted to use the research of the Japanese experiments was none other than Mr. Charles Willoughby, the chief of intelligence for General Douglas MacArthur's staff, and I've talked, I know I've done many broadcasts on Willoughby, and he found out about Japanese germ warfare that continued in Japan after the war, and it had secret funding from the American government. This article came out in the London Observer August 21st, 1983, 5 years ago. Prisoners, babies, mental patients were used for experimentation, and former members of the Japanese German germ warfare unit in Manchuria, Unit 731, just met along with the American 406th Division, part of the occupation force, and the Americans knew that the Japanese were experimenting on these people, and under a department called Infectious Diseases Department in Tokyo, and it combined the work of the experiments in Manchuria, and then after the war, and the Americans used their experiments. And Charles Willoughby thought and wrote up an article that it would be beneficial for the Americans to use the effect of the Japanese experiences. They were actually freezing people in their limbs, freezing them alive, and testing the effect of freezing on them to a certain point, shooting into their frozen limbs, and testing them for typhoid and organisms and poison, drinking water and food. And Mr. Willoughby, his name is Carl Wiedenbach, a member of Hitler's school, the Berlin School of War, the Kriegsakademie, the Freikorps were the young Nazis that were killing until they became the police department when Hitler came in office in 1933. He was part of the Kriegsakademie, the Berlin Academy for War. And Willoughby was a founding member of Young Americans for Freedom, put together by William Buckley and Douglas Caddy. And on the board, sharing an honor with Willoughby, was Ronald Reagan, whose background goes way back to those fascist days, Willoughby, and the experimentations and so forth. A book called Devil's Brigade came out on this subject, and I talked about that in 1983. The Devil's Brigade is about the experiments in Harbin and the use of the Americans wanting to employ the techniques that the Japanese used for killing thousands. And this is another book on the Harbin germ factory. And instead of trying the Japanese for war crimes and experimentations, we used their material and joined with them. And, of course, you know, Dr. Joseph Mengele, who did these experiments, and all the other doctors who did the experiments were never tried as war criminals in Nuremberg. And one reason is that we wanted to use the expertise of their work and use it for future use, which we probably are doing now continuously, benefiting. And the EPA just this past month, a few weeks ago, was using the Nazi experiments for studies on germ warfare. And finally, to conclude this broadcast, 852, Spotlight magazine, published by Willie Cardo, has a picture of James Beau Gritz with David Duke. And the article says that Beau Gritz, a man that we've talked about on these broadcasts, has been revealing the narcotics connections to higher-ups in Washington, is going to run as vice president under David Duke. Now, some of you don't know the name David Duke of Louisiana. He was formerly the Grand Wizard of the Knights of the Ku Klux Klan, of all the Klan in the United States. He left the Klan formally to start the National Association for the Advancement of White People. That's part of the Aryan Nations, that all of America could be white. And one of the groups that David Duke knew and associated with were a team of people that originally wanted to take over Dominica Island. Remember, I talked about that terrorism on many broadcasts going back to 1981. And David Duke worked with Robert Vesco, a person important with the Iran-Contra affair, links to many of the people, particularly those investigating or financing the entire Iran-Contra operations. And the group that were going to take over Dominica were to put swastikas and army memorabilia and renew Nazi artifacts and lifestyles in the Caribbean. So Mr. David Duke, who had already said he wanted to run for president, has Beau Gritz wanting to be his vice president. Well, the tape is up now. I was going to do more on the Knights of Klan and David Duke, but I think you get the essence of what I'm saying about this team. And though Beau Gritz wants to expose drugs coming into this country, he still is very much part of the far, far right establishment and always was. That is the conclusion of this tape. It's about to run out, so I must say goodbye to you now. I'll be back with you next week to continue with many, many stories and a lot more on George Bush.